Welcome to this episode of George Takes a Sentimental Ernie, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I am one of your Lopez lovers, Kyle, joined by my co-host, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Looking forward to loving on some Lopez tonight.
I know, and it's exciting. We've tried to cover this one, actually, last August, I believe. Unfortunately, just like last August, it's weird timing. We're not going to be able to talk about the episode where George realizes how difficult it is to live with Ernie and his parents, so he convinces Ernie to get his own place. I don't know how this happened. We have a returning guest, and they're returning on the same one, Tim. I apologize, but very excited. We're going to be talking to the creators of one of the best comics out there, Blood Force Trauma, Jake and Hiram. How are you guys doing?
Hey.
Oh, thank you. We're doing good. Yeah, we're doing
thank
great.
Thank you so much.
I'm super excited to learn about the George's predicament with Ernie.
Yeah, no, I'm also excited. I'm also excited to learn about more about George Lopez's daughter. I forgot her name, but I had a huge crush on her when I was a kid watching the show.
Oh, man, she's on something now? She's all grown up. Yeah, I saw her, and I was like, who is that lady? And then I realized it was, like, her daughter. I was like, oh, fuck. Like, I don't know how old that show is.
Crazy.
Yeah, no, because like the show doesn't. What's weird is that the show doesn't look as old as you think it does. Like it's weird. You know what I mean? Like it looks more new in a way. I can't explain it.
That's just how timeless that show is. Honestly,
yeah. The show was ahead of its time. Running on Nick.
I can't figure out which show is more ahead of its time. Like George Lopez or like iCarly.
Yeah, iCarly. But iCarly's coming back. Hopefully, that George Lopez is coming back too.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope George Lopez comes back in like a huge way.
Let's hashtag release the Lopez cut.
Yeah, HBO Max, what the Lopez family is up to during the
release
pandemic.
The Lopez.
I want 4-hour versions of every George Lopez episode.
I want not that's not even good enough. I want like every George Lopez like filmography, like when he played that like electro guy in Sharkboy and Lava Girl, and he's like, "What?
Oh yeah,
oh."
Yeah. When he's that giant TV head, that was a good
yeah,
one.
Yeah, it's great. I love that George Lopez.
Man.
Quite a range. Yeah. I'm sure Benny has hopefully got through COVID. Fingers crossed.
Oh, poor Benny.
But you guys were here in, I think it was August, for Blood Force Trauma 2, and you guys have now, you're listening to this episode is up. I think by the time it's up, it'll be maybe like 4 days left. Or so,
okay.
You guys are into three, destroying it. I mean, we talked to you too, and it was like obviously a good support behind that, but like this one, like you guys had no problem, and it seems like people are like super stoked on this book. How does it feel now being kind of on the third one and it really just being essentially no problem, making it look easy?
Yeah, after you got that pages and panel bump, which was what you
oh,
really
yeah.
wanted.
Dude, the day after the episode dropped, I was like, I could not believe how much more money we had made. I was like, oh my God, it's all those George Lopez fans. They're itching for new comedy.
For that. Yeah.
Every George Lopez fan just happens to be a fan of Blood Force Trauma as well.
Yeah, like, our fans intersect. It's weird. But yeah, no, we're really excited about the third one. I get worried about it every time. And then it did fund really quickly, which is really awesome. After we did the second one, I got a bunch of people being like, when's the third one coming out? And every time I do a Kickstarter, I always feel weird because it feels like we're like, hey, give us money, you know, and it feels very like we want your money, but we're giving people things in return. And I forget that people like our comic book and they want copies of it. So when I'm like, give us money, please, they're like, yeah, we get stuff out of it. So this one's doing well. And it's only got like 1 week left. And usually a lot of people show up for that last week. So excited to see how it turns out, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a weird, I mean, and something Kickstarter has obviously kind of pushed, like even when you make the pledge, it says like, you know, making a pledge isn't buying something, but
yeah,
for the most part, that's, you know, what it is, I think, or at least how comics is kind of evolved to use that. I mean, even since like when you guys did it last time, that's something we talked about, kind of like how it's grown to be almost a pretty easy avenue for people to kind of publish their stuff or get it out. Since August, like it's like I've backed like, you know, a couple things just this month, like even the past couple of weeks, like it's insane, like how many things are going through that, which is great again, because like, I mean, that's the thing, like I have money and I want to give comics, and it's fucking easier than doing it like going to a shop or like having to wait for like Image to actually publish something I want to read.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's what I feel like. And that's what it's cool when I see creators put out a book on Kickstarter, because I know that that's a book that they really care about, and they tried to get it picked up by a company probably, and the company was probably like, this is too weird, we don't want it. And then they were like, well, fuck you, I'm going to put it on Kickstarter, you know? And so those books are fun. I'm trying to think, like Beef Bros from Aubrey Sitterson came out, and that one looked really cool. And that looked very much like a book he tried to pitch, and it just doesn't feel like a book that Image would go for. And so he was like, I'm just going to do it. And, you know, I love that punk rock kind of attitude with comics, you know?
Yeah, I think we had Aubrey on for that, and that was very much like this is something that, especially, I mean, with kind of his history of like being a very vocal, I guess, leftist in that sense, and like, oh, you want to make like a cool, like leftist, like fuck yeah comic, like then most of the people aren't going to take chances on that shit. And like, so it's just like a great avenue to do that.
Yeah, and the art was great. Tyrell, his stuff's awesome. And that one looked great. So that's just kind of like, and I like those fans, that those type of fans that want, you know, fun new comics. And so Kickstarter's always been a fun avenue for that. And we're really excited because this third issue is if you liked the first two, this third one is my favorite of the three, you know. So I'm excited for people to get their hands on it.
I was wondering for you guys, I mean, so one of the things you kind of announced is if you hit the 8,000 to go forward with issue 4, but you guys have planned kind of this 12-issue arc, and you're currently doing it kind of issue by issue if you hit the 8,000 to go to 4, but in itself is that even more like, I don't want to say nerve, but like, where if you're releasing it kind of through a publisher or even like on your own website, like, you know, if there's a 12-issue arc, sometimes there's an issue that is, you know, maybe setting something up. Is there any, like, fear of doing a Kickstarter for, like, that's an issue that's, you know, maybe, like, you know, this is, like, a setup issue or something like that? Is that something that has crossed your mind as you kind of break down the arcs for the 12 issues?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's interesting. We have thought about that in the way that every issue is part of a larger story, and what could run into is not every issue ends in a way that could like finish the series if it never kept going. But I feel like each issue has enough content in it that they don't feel like setup issues. Everything, like every issue has a big fight scene moment in it, and they all like progress the story. So I would feel really weird about kickstarting a book that then people get it and the whole thing's like people talking to set up the next big fight. And then they're like, oh, well now I have to, he's obviously set me up to where I have to give him more money. So I try to make sure big things happen in every issue. And then me and Hiram are still talking to publishers. We had one that just kind of was super, we were like agreed and they were like, we're going to do it. And then they ran into some like printer issues. You know, I think they were dealing with, you know, COVID stuff. And I was like, hey, can we go ahead and kickstart it just because we need, you know, we have the issue and we need some money. You know, we're kind of broke. So can we do the Kickstarter while we wait for you? Because I have no idea when they're going to get back to us. It could be like a year or two. And they were like, yeah, go for it. And then because I already went ahead and did issue 4. And I was like, and I'm also got issue 4 done. So I kind of put that stretch goal up just as like, you know, way out there. If we make it, that's awesome and we can print it, but it's so out there, I'm almost like, it'd be crazy if we got to 8, because we're at like 4 now, and that'd be basically doubling it in the last week, which I really don't think that'll happen, but it's kind of that thing where if it did, I'd be like, oh wow, that's amazing, you know?
Yeah, no, crazier things have happened, I guess, on Kickstarter such as these.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe, but if we get to 8, I'm like, 8's a big enough number. I feel comfortable just printing another issue, especially because we're sitting on it. And the fourth issue, Yusha, finally makes her appearance in the fourth issue, and I've been waiting for that. So originally she was supposed to appear in issue 2, But through us writing the story, it felt more natural for her to come in issue four. And I was like, oh man, I can't even, like, as creating the book, I was like, I can't even wait that long. I just want to shove, like, put her in there somewhere. And it just made more sense to wait. But so, yeah, we have that issue done. And if we make it, that'd be cool.
I know that's what's, like, the great thing kind of about the way you guys have laid it out is, I think a lot of times, something we've talked about a bunch is, like, and I think even last time, like, the Kickstarters, where that is kind of, the premise of it is, like, you know, we have the book ready, you guys want it, here's the cost, essentially, to publish it and get us paid and for it to get it in your hands. But then you guys have, like, you know, made the covers for subsequent, like, for issues down the line. So then, like, I see this Cobra guy with a headband.
Yeah.
Like, I want to fucking get to that guy. I'm like, what issue is he? I'm like, all right, let's just, you know, let's just kickstart to that guy. Let's fucking do it. So in, like, issue 12 with, like, the Son Goku, like, Zap, like, I'm like, oh, fucking, like, get there. Let's fucking do it.
Yeah, that's kind of the, I'm exactly how you are, where we've got these all planned out and they're just words. And I just, like, I like to see it visually. So I kind of made those covers just for myself so I can be like, you know, wishful thinking, just imagining, like, I can't wait till one day that cover will be on a real book with, like, stuff inside of it. So, like, issue 12, he finally faces, who's supposed to be the big bad guy of the whole, this first arc, Slicer Dex. He finally has a finale fight with him, and I can't wait to eventually get to that. And I know Hiram can't either. Hiram created Slicer Dex, and Hiram has been itching for it as well.
I have been, like, I'm yeah. Like, I don't know, I feel like ever since, like, Jake, like, draw, like, I think, like, ever since you've, like, came up with this official design of what he would look like, I just got instantly more excited. It really unlocks my Virgil from Dante's Devil May Cry series.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he is a lot like that, and kind of our homage to that. And me and Hiram have already, like, we sat down not too long ago and we plotted out arc two. Like, we're, like, really excited about this book, and maybe too much so. Like, I think Hiram's created, like, on his own, like, 15 to 20 brand new fighters with backstories that we're gonna try to put in there, like, as naturally as possible. At some point I was like, Hiram, you gotta stop making them, we literally can't fit this many people in. But they're pretty cool.
Yeah, man, that's been, like, one of the most fun things about, I think, a story like this, because, like, you hop through, like, because all these characters go from one dimension to the next, it sort of creates a sort of sandbox feel where, like, any and all things that could be, like, you know, any and all things can really happen, any and all characters, like, no matter how kooky or crazy or, like, absurd, is somehow acceptable in this one, you know?
Yeah.
Which is what I really like about it. And it's easy to pitch to Jake things that, like, he would be in for as far as something like this.
Hiram knows me.
Yeah, knows how absolutely. To get me. Like, no matter how ridiculous them. But sorry, okay. Go ahead.
I was gonna, like, so, I mean, that's obviously one of the big appeals of the book, especially for me, is, like, the look of the book, the aesthetic of the characters and all the designs. And as you kind of have are doing this issue to issue with Kickstarter currently, and that's kind of like giving fans, like, little glimpses looking into the future, has your approach to the book for, like, later issue, like, changed at all when kind of people are getting, like, you know, the first issue, second issue, or are you guys just kind of heads down working on it, like, something where your guys are so interactive with the fans because of the Kickstarter avenue? Is there any changes you've made to the series as things work, things don't work, that you've noticed from issues that people have started to get?
That's a good question. I think one of the big things was how much, and we talked about this last time, how much people liked Meat Grinder the most. And we were like, we were like, if you haven't read the first issue,
kill them,
right? You can go and get on the Kickstarter. But if you have read it, I'll say spoilers. And so Meat Grinder dies, like, right away. And I felt so bad because I was like, people do pinups. If you want to do, like, fan art, like, cool. And then I was getting back all these Meat Grinders. And I was like, oh, my God, I feel so bad. He dies, like, right away. He's not even supposed to be, like, a character. So I won't spoil what we do with Meat Grinder, but because of the reaction to, you know, how much it seems like people like him, we've got, you know, a plan for Meat Grinder. It's not an obvious plan for him, but it's going to be something cool.
Hey, Darth Mauled him. He's going to have robot legs.
Yeah, yeah, dude. I won't say, but it'll be fun.
Can't confirm or deny it, but you know.
Yeah, I love, like, our, you know, our fun comic book, and people love it, but it's, you know, it's not like we're promoting like the next blockbuster movie. So I love being able to be in a position where I can be like, I can't spoil it or confirm. Like, this will probably be the only time this ever happens where I get to act like I've got a big secret that I'm hiding.
Also, I thought Kickstarters, you got, I thought you got Netflix deals, and then you made Kickstarters.
Yeah, we get the Netflix deal first, and then I'm like, all right, let's do a Kickstarter. I mean, why not?
For the designs, I was doodling while we were waiting, I love the designs. So, like Zap's helmet is fucking great, and these kind of elaborate designs, do you create them and then think, oh, fuck, I got to draw the main character with this elaborate helmet every time in these different positions? Is that something you've thought of as now you've kind of roped in these insane designs? Or is that the fun of it as obviously kind of the writers and artists?
Well, that's actually an awesome question, because I feel like this is a big thing that writers in comics should learn too for their artists. Like a big when they're, you know, the writer creates a character. If they can make sure to make the character fun for the artist to draw over and over again, which I think a lot of artists will make a cool design and forget that they have to draw them 400 times. And, so like, I have that very much in mind. So I like Zap a lot of the book. He doesn't even need to wear the helmet. He could just take it off and be like a guy, but I feel like it would be so boring to draw his face over and over again without something cool on it. So I gave him that sweet helmet because it was fun to draw. Like, I've drawn it so many times and I've never gotten tired of drawing it, even though it kind of, you know, it's got all the little gizmos on it, so it seems like it would be a pain, but like, I love drawing his helmet. Now, I have designed other characters that I drew them like 3 times and I was like, I can't do this over and over again, this sucks. But every Blood Force Trauma character, I made sure to make them in a way where I had fun drawing them every time. So yeah, Zap, I've drawn him the most, and I never get tired of it. Because then I put big old sweat beads on his face, and that's always fun to draw.
Yeah, he's always so sweaty.
He's incredibly sweaty. He's a nervous guy. He is anxious, much like me and Hiram are in real life.
Do you take reference photos of yourself all sweaty so you can get the beads of sweat just right?
Yeah, I jump on the treadmill, and I do a couple, you know, a couple miles on the treadmill, and then I take all these beautiful reference photos.
Well, I think now everyone, because I mean, well, at least us normal people are wearing masks when we're out and about, so I can imagine having a big fucking helmet on. I'd be sweating.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
Is that's something I wonder, and I don't know if I've noticed it in the issue, is his hair colored that way because of the helmet?
No, that's, I think his hair is,
yeah, that's just the color of his hair. Yeah,
I was actually, his hair was supposed to be black, and then I did a promo image where the background was black, and you couldn't see his hair, so I was like, oh, it's the future, it's this weird cyberpunk world with shark people, you know, he can just have purple hair, whatever, so I just gave him purple hair. It's not dyed either, that's just, his hair is purple, and, you know, there's a semi-spoiler, but we actually, this issue is the first one we get to see him without his helmet on, and it's actually very surprising. I sent Hiram a picture of him without his helmet, and Hiram was like, he looks so strange.
Yeah, it's like he just looks iconic with his helmet on, you know, and without it, it's just like oh, that's what it looks like without his helmet.
Yeah.
You should do it, and then just never show it, but the characters reacts.
It's not, yeah, they go like a Kakashi when Kakashi takes his mask off.
Yeah, I was on board with shark people, but purple hair, I know this might be a bridge too far for.
Yeah, I think I'm done. I'll go back to Maiden Flashers. Thank you.
I don't know. Wait, I don't know what you're talking about. That's some book. Yeah. last time, and I know that's kind of a big influence and kind of a big sell for the book is like the love of, you know, like Street Fighter and these crazy video games and kind of like the 80s movie aesthetic. As comic creators though and writers, is there anything that's you guys are drawing upon kind of from the comic medium, either other artists or anything kind of that's making its way into the way you're either structuring it or approaching it, like art wise, is there any kind of comics that you guys are looking to for inspiration just as much as like kind of the video game aesthetic?
Oh, that's a very Jake question, because I'm very new to comic books. I'm not, you know, I've said this every time, but like I came from a background that's not comic oriented, and so I'm just learning everything comic books like. In
oh, so you have like friends.
I know.
And stuff, then.
I'm trying to get him into it, but a lot of honestly, recently a lot of like you know, manga is a big influence too. But I don't know if you guys have read Shogun Warriors. Way from back in the day, Marvel Comics. But I love that book, and it's drawn very much like Jack Kirby, and so I took a lot of Jack Kirby isms in this book, a lot of like when characters come out at you the way he does it, and like big hands in the foreground and, you know, crazy science equipment that makes no sense, but it's fantastic because it's Jack Kirby. A lot of that has made its way in. I'm really inspired by a lot of artists that I've met who are newer. Like, I don't know if you guys know Buster Moody, but he's a big influence. And, he did one of the pinups, and his book, Laser Storm, that he was doing on Patreon. I don't know if he's still doing it. But that was a big influence, just his, like, how he wanted to make a comic exactly how he wanted to make it, and it was over the top and it wasn't super serious, and it was just like it was like books that you would find in a bargain bin. It's kind of my inspiration. Like, you'd find it and it'd be like a treasure. You'd be like, what, Blood Force Trauma, what is this? I've never heard of this. And just imagining somebody finding it gets me excited. A lot of Ninja Turtles stuff in this book too. I think it's very Ninja Turtlesy, and He-Man, a lot of, I feel like Thrash is a direct, like, he's basically Skeletor, kind of, like, science fiction Skeletor. I don't know, there's a lot of stuff. It's kind of all the combination of all the comics I've always loved, kind of rolled into one, you know, and kind of, like, comes out of me. But yeah, I don't know if you guys have heard of Fear Agent, but Fear Agent was a big inspiration. I love that book. But yeah, you know, just a bunch of that stuff. Most of the movies and video game stuff comes from Hiram too, just because, you know, he's not as into comics. I'm going to get him more into them because now he's making them. So it's kind of hard to avoid it, you know?
Well, don't ruin it. You don't want to ruin his life.
Yeah.
It's too late, man. Like, I've been looking up a lot of comics to get, like, from Image's catalog, like, recently. It's kind of weird. I'm like, I can't believe I'm about to amass another... I was gonna amass like a new comic collection I never thought I would like ever get, but here we are.
Well, you got to get that Ultra Mega book that just came
out.
Yeah,
no, I want that too. That's the thing. Like, I really want Space Riders. I forgot, there's like a couple I forgot the names of, but that Jake told me about.
Yeah, Reed Murder Falcon.
Ultra today.
You what?
Ultra Mega.
I just picked up Ultra Mega today. I finally got out to a shop, and that was like the one thing, like one of the few things I had to get.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. I got the normal cover and the trad cover. They were like, it's $8, are you sure? And I was like, yeah.
Yes, worth every penny.
Yeah.
Speaking of the trad cover, as an artist having Trad Moore do a pinup, do you think, like, why do I even draw books anymore? Like,
yeah.
That pinup is, holy shit. Like, and I've talked to Trad like so many times, like, it obviously has the weird drawing style, everyone, or the how he holds the pencil, everyone knows, like, it's weird shit. Like,
yeah,
like, I look at that, I'm like, I that could take me 4 years to even draw that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, he's awesome. I was really excited. It's funny because when I thought of the idea for Blood Force Trauma, it was really just I wanted to make a fighting game inspired comic, and I wanted Trad to draw it. And I remember emailing him, and I think he just didn't see it, which is fine. He's super busy. But then I was like, what am I kidding? Trad is like doing Marvel and all this stuff. I'll just draw it. So like, it was kind of like I wanted Trad to draw it, and I wanted to write it. And then when I realized, oh, it's Trad, I'm like, I guess I'll just draw it. It's fine. Like, my dream would be to, I would love to write a book for him. Just because we've emailed back and forth and he's super nice. And he did this pinup for me and he's given me the art for free. He's just like, he's literally like the coolest guy, and all of his success, he deserves it, like, for sure.
He is my very first interview. And I think he was still, it was like right before Luther Strode came out, like the first one.
Oh, wow.
He was still finishing up. I think he was like, I don't know if he was still in college at the time. But yeah, I remember talking to him, and like, he was like, you know, I would love to do Marvel stuff. You know, I would love to do a Final Fantasy comic. So every time I see him, I'm like, a fucking Final Fantasy comic would, like, once he said that, I was like, that would be the coolest thing ever. But
I don't think that's awesome.
Wow, doing a Final Fantasy, that's nuts.
Oh yeah, that's what I want Trad to do. I want him to go full out, do his own thing that's super Dragon Ball inspired, because I know that's his biggest stuff that he's influenced by. That would be awesome. Marvel should just give him manga format and be like, hey man, you can make as many pages and we'll just literally give you whatever you want. That's what they should do.
Maybe they see the sales on, I mean, they've pretty much done that with Peach Momoko, or
yeah,
like, for whatever reason, that's blown up. Not for whatever reason, because the art's gorgeous, but like, they've pretty much been like, you know, just do what you want, I guess.
That's how they should. Totally how they should be. I heard they weren't even going to do the Silver Surfer book. They were almost going to not do it, and Trad had to convince them to do it, which is crazy.
I mean, you meant, oh, go ahead.
You what? Sorry.
You could, I mean, you mentioned it. You could do a Task Force Rat Squad crossover. That was it, right?
Oh, yeah. Buster's book. Yeah, that would be awesome. That was so, I love that good book.
Was it with Caleb? Caleb, yeah.
I think.
Yeah, Caleb and Buster. Yeah, that book's awesome. He gave me all the issues. And I was bummed about his Kickstarter. I told him right before he did it. I was like, bro, $25,000 is a lot. I was like, I don't know who's told you to do that. I was like, it's a little too much.
Yeah, I mean, I think we hit on it last time, but for you guys, like, that approach and kind of coming in at the, like, 3,500, which is, like, people see that and, like, okay, like, that's, you know, obviously that's doable, and I think, I don't know if that should be part of the incentive for people to back things, but I think seeing it and it being, like, a goal that people feel like, oh, that's gonna, you know, that's gonna hit.
Yeah.
How difficult is that for you guys to kind of come to that thing? Is that something you have to like consult people for, or are you like, especially now kind of being seasoned in it, like how easy or difficult is it still to kind of figure out what is like the reasonable goal and to actually get you guys paid and it to be something that is feasible that you feel comfortable presenting to people?
I've done a couple, and so I've kind of like realized what the thing is. So I've done a couple that haven't funded, and I've done ones that have funded. And it is like you said, like, it's weird. If I set the goal at five, it might not fund. But if I set it at 3,500, it will fund and then get up to five, which is weird. Like, it should, you set it at five and it'll make it. It's almost like, so when I'm factoring it in, I just do the math on how much it would cost to print the book and ship it to and ship all the rewards to everyone. And that's the reward. So like, I don't factor in payment for ourselves. Any money that goes over the fund goal is for us, or for us to print, you know, to make the stretch goals or whatever. Because I feel like if I just do it at the base level of this is literally how much I need, it usually reflects that in the people who look at the Kickstarter. Like, they kind of subconsciously know, like, they look at a $3,500 for a comic book and they're like, yeah, that makes about sense. But if you put like $20K for a comic book, I think subconsciously people look at that and go, that's a lot for, you know, like for 22 pieces of paper, you know, that you would send to me. So yeah, just kind of like doing it a few times and having a couple that didn't make it, and, you know, going by that, I guess. and seeing, you know, other, I'll go through the Kickstarter page and just see what's doing well and like what, oh, also like what project images do well, like what they kind of look like and what sucks people in. Like, I realize no one likes logos on their project images, which I always thought was cool, but all the best ones don't have a logo at all. Like, they just have an image and that's it.
Interesting.
So, you know.
Is that something, again, kind of the growth of Kickstarter maybe this year, given the circumstances of everything?
Yeah.
Is that something, do you think, I don't know, I don't know how you would educate people or have that discussion, because like I said, you could easily do, like, say you do the, that's like, I don't know, 6,000, and you, like, but then, you like you said, you kind of have to justify to people as to why, but at the same time, like, I feel like, you know, obviously running a Kickstarter is part of the job of being the creators. Again, like, you want to get yourself paid, like, this is a job for you, whether or not, like, it is, you know, a passion, like, you should get paid for making stuff people enjoy. Like, that seems like, because again, with publishers or being attached to a publisher, I think people, like, understand that, or I think they think publishers are treating creators well, which, you know, they're not for the most part, but,
yeah,
like, I don't know how to have that, like, have that discussion where, like, you can factor in those things, like, hey, like, I would pay, you know, I would pay $15 for an issue of Blood Force Trauma if, like, you know, I'm paying $5 and I'm giving you guys, like, $10 for, you know, existing as people so you can buy food and shit. Like, I don't know. I don't know how we get to that place.
Well, I think that's awesome. But I do think you're one of the, not the few, I would say, but one of the, like, you're a comic fan, Kickstarter comic fan specifically, like, you back things regularly, you know, you're like, you know what it takes. You've talked to all of us, so you know. I think some casual people just go on there and they go, $10, that's a lot, you know, and they don't understand that. It's like when you do an indie book, and I would go to cons, and I, when I was first starting, and I was selling my little book for like $3, because I was like, when I go to the store, I like it when a book's $3, and then all these indie books are like $5, $8, whatever, and they're telling me like, hey, you, if you do the math, you didn't print that many, but you paid a lot out of your own pocket, so you're not a big publisher, you don't have the resources to charge that little. And people who are fans will understand if you charge a little bit more for an indie book. So I think, like, we know that, but, like, a Kickstarter is hard because I think people who just pop in are, like, you know, don't always get that. So when I do them, I want that. I want to make money, but it is kind of hard. Because I remember my first one I did, Offbeat Town, that one went way over the goal. Like, we made 10K on a 3K goal. And I mishandled the international shipping and did all that and did so bad that I didn't make anything. Like, I ended up spending way more on it than I made, and that just kind of sucks. So, like, I wish we could do way more and make it, but, you know, that's just kind of how it goes.
You should just have a picture. The logo should be a picture of Hiram with his new comic bells.
Yeah. Buy all these books. It money. Should be like, help me get into comics. That should be our Kickstarter.
Yeah. Instead of your, like, sick retro music, it should just be like, you could have the Sarah McLachlan music under your Kickstarter video.
Yeah. It could be like Hiram, he's like those sad dog commercials, he's in a cage and he's like, help me read comic books, give me pennies a day.
Just 2 pennies a day would make a world of difference.
Would help me buy a comic book.
Has I mean, again, within a year time, making another video, is that something that, is there a thought of just like, oh, we don't have to do a video for this one, or you have to do, is that something you figured out, people like videos? I don't think I've ever watched a video unless I'm doing the interviews or something, or maybe they don't post. I hate when they don't post, like, preview images and I gotta watch a video. You figured out? People watch videos? Do you get any, like, feedback or statistics on if people watch it?
I mean, I think, like, Jake, you've done, like, the last two, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you edited the first one, and then I just said the last two. I don't know, like, I feel like a lot of people don't watch them, because I got a lot of people who ask me a question that I answered in the video. and I'll be like, oh, it's in the video, and they'll be like, oh, I didn't watch it, and I'll be like, oh, okay, because I don't watch videos either, honestly. But you know, if there's an option to do it, I would suggest just do it, because you never know, somebody might stumble upon it and want to watch it. And I don't think it's necessary, but yeah, like you said, I definitely preview images. If you're going to pick preview images or a video, do the preview images, because that drives me crazy too. When I go on a Kickstarter and it's only a video, and then you look at the description and there's nothing, I'm like, I instantly want to just leave the website.
It's like the equivalent of doing a cover letter. It's like, it's not necessary, but you know, it's probably best for you to do it. Just put in that extra work.
It looks nice.
It just looks nice, you know?
You know, Jake, have you thought about the Brian Polito route of just drawing sexy, almost naked women and then making like $85,000 on each Kickstarter?
Whoa, 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 whoa. That comes later. We wrote that in the script. No, I don't know.
That's in the script. That's a secret. No, we should. No, if that was in the book, I would advertise that. I would make that money. No, I've thought about it, because I have a friend who has like a secret Patreon. I won't tell who it is, but he's an artist and he has a Patreon just for doing that, for drawing sexy things for people. And he makes so much more money on that than his comics. And it is like kind of a way of, and anyone who does that, do it. I salute you. That's awesome. I honestly think I would get way too into it, and I would be like stressing about how bad I am at drawing like that kind of anatomy. And I'd be like, damn it, nothing I'm drawing looks sexy.
It's got to be anatomically correct and sexy. That's a lot of hard work.
Yeah, I'm like, fuck, I'm drawing skull people and shark men. I guess I could make the shark guy sexier, but
you can make Meat Grinder. I mean, he has the name Meat in the name, you know?
Yeah, he can be like, I'll give you my meat. And then he just shows off his ass.
why are there all these helmets over these boobies? I don't understand why he keeps doing that.
Yeah, just like let us see him.
Yeah, well, it's so weird that Tim was gonna ask that question. I was gonna say about doing the preview images, but just putting like well placed black bars over it so people think that that's it.
Oh,
I know. Anytime I go to Kickstarter with black bars, I'm like, I'm gonna click this about page and go see what else they've done.
No, that's a good idea. I'll put black bars over something that literally doesn't make any sense to have a black bar over it, and you'll be like, "What?" And I'm just tricking people.
Yeah, get that.
We'll have like the old man announcer guy. We'll have big black bars over him, and you'll be like, "What? Is he naked?"
I think you guys done this time as well as the arcade stick. Again, managing a comic book, but then also releasing an arcade stick. How did that come about, and is that kind of a fairly different process for you?
No, I mean, not really. It's kind of like making the t-shirts. It really is just, I designed that. There's a website where you can go and design your own decal for an arcade stick. And I just made a specific design just for that. And it was more fun than anything, you know. So I just made that. So what I do is I order the arcade stick and then put the decal on it, and then I send it to you. So it'd be cool if like I can make the arcade
stick. Yeah, it'd be cool if we made like a completely different, like a Blood Force Trauma original arcade stick. That'd be dope.
That'd be crazy. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah, you could do, I'm trying to think what would be a good stick, like his antenna coming out of his helmet. You can make it the helmet.
Meat Grinder's dick.
Could be me, yeah.
That's where you put the black bar over it.
You put
black bar over it.
Yeah, put the black bar over it, and it says censored, and you can take it off. It'll be Velcro.
What was that? Oh, I don't know, one of the wrestling games had the nudie code. It was like the.
Oh really?
Yeah, I don't remember which one. I don't remember. I don't want to announce that. I already started talking about.
I love that meaty code.
Yeah. Is there anything, again, as you guys kind of the success of this one moving into the other ones have thought about or have explored, like, you know, obviously it would be kind of you know, a great avenue for like a vinyl figure, anything like that, or is that then kind of putting a lot of work onto you and like already just the difficulty of kind of getting comics out?
Oh no, I would love it. Like, all right, ideal is to have like action figures and all that, you know, nerdy stuff that we love. I would love a vinyl figure. I'm sure I could find an artist who would want to do one, but I just haven't found anyone. But if you know of anybody who would want to do one and also do one moderately, you know, inexpensive, let me know.
Yes, they want. I mean, they could do it for exposure. I hear people like to be paid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you can get a sucker who will do it for free, dude, no, I'm just kidding. Don't do that.
I think at this point, I mean, you have the options for kind of catching up if that were the case. But I have to imagine it's kind of like a lot of returning people. I don't know who would be at this point, but if anyone was on kind of the fence about backing it, like what would be kind of the pitch for 3? Like, why is this either maybe this is the one to kind of jump on for?
Well, I mean, if you haven't read the first two, and you're excited, and you saw this one, and you're like, oh, maybe I'll catch up and read it. This one is really fun because it is the first real fight for Zap since he started training. This is his first real opponent. So you get to see more of the structure of what the rest of the series would be. The first two.
You also get to, like, get a taste of, like, you know, a bit of, like, Lightning Legs training methods, like a little bit more of his backstory. One character specifically, Valerie, who is more and more important as the story goes forward. She makes an appearance, and the way we wrote specifically the like Jake's idea for how Ben Gonza is presented, and which I think is hilarious but also intimidating, and I think that's just like the perfect balance, and I think that's what people should look forward to when they read it.
Yeah, so I would just think if you haven't been into it so far and you want to give it a try, if you think demon luchador characters are cool and this is the thing to get you into it, like that's what we've got. So
yeah, I mean, as always, generally if we're doing a Kickstarter episode, one, we fully support any episode we do because, again, how awkward would it be to do a book we don't like to talk about? But also, just, you know, I'm very selfish. I would love to get that George Lopez bump, get it up to 8,000. Give me fucking issue 4, people. What is going on?
That would be so cool.
Before Tim does his final question, I think we've changed it since you were on last time.
So yeah.
We don't have to think of a new one. But I think one of the things that I always really enjoy about Kickstarter, because again, I'm a weird nerd, is like the thank yous in the back, and I like looking at it and seeing like, oh man, like that person backed it. I'm as cool as they are. Is there anyone that you see that you've had back the project that has been cool, either kind of like you know, a colleague or anyone that like you are a fan of? Is there anyone that's like surprised you when you've got to that part of kind of like who backs things?
Oh yeah, so like, you know, and I've been really fortunate to get all these really cool artists that I've gotten to meet at shows. Because you know, when you meet cool artists at shows, they're it's so weird with how open they are to doing art for you. So I got all these great pinups. But a really cool one I got last time, Greg Smallwood, who did, you know, Moon Knight and Spider-Man, and he's done all this Marvel stuff. He's awesome. He did the last pinup of Zap's face, and he was just like, "Yeah, I'll do it," and he backed the first one, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, Greg Smallwood backed it. That's super cool. And then he did a pinup for the second one, and that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that Aaron Colony one. Jeez. Yeah, there's like murderer's row of pinups in the back of this.
Oh, yeah. It's been really cool.
Super cool, yeah.
One I tried to find, is it Gabrielle Hudson? Do you know what she does?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, that's my girlfriend. Right? Yeah, that's my girlfriend. Yeah, she did a really great job with that, actually.
Yeah, because I Googled her, and there's apparently someone who got arrested with that same name. She was very difficult to find. I was like, oh, fuck, this thing's insane. Is it her?
Did she get arrested? No. She didn't get arrested, unless, you know, she did something I didn't know about, but I'm pretty sure, no, that wasn't her.
Oh, man, yeah, that one's fucking dope.
You gotta call right now. She's like, Hiram, you need to come pick me up.
Yeah, you gotta bail me out.
Tim, do you want to get your final question in?
Yeah, I'm still just looking at all these pinups. They're all so dope.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're really excited.
Yeah, we really like the pinups that you didn't draw, Jake.
Yeah. Hey,
that you didn't draw.
They're great. They're great for, like, promotion. I'll be like, oh, look, more things I didn't have to draw and sit down and do. Like, cool, thank you. Like, they don't – it's such a nice thing to do a pinup for someone. It's literally, like, feeding somebody. Like, it's that level of, like, niceness. Like, you gave me free advertising, basically. So, thank you to them.
I would really love to see more Zap and Lightning Legs art, honestly. Like, honestly,
yeah, there's really people love Meat Grinder, and Yusha has even gotten a lot more.
People love Meat Grinder. People love Yusha, but like people really love Meat Grinder. It's just weird.
And Zap, poor Zap. I think Lightning Legs has more than Zap. I think Zap has the least. I did a poll on Twitter to see what character people would want an enamel pin for if we did those. And I think Zap got 0%.
Jesus. Do you think that is, especially with the pinups, maybe like kind of because of, at that point you were doing it prior to the first issue and then now kind of working in it. So obviously kind of like, I was thinking of it like when, you know, like Hasbro does like figures for the new Marvel movie, they're working off like concept images. They're always fucking different. Like, do you think as the series progresses, like, people will fall more in love with people that aren't Meat Grinder?
Oh, I hope so. I really hope so.
Yeah, no, like, the characters that are slated to, like, be introduced in the next several issues and even in the next arc are going to be a lot more wacky and a lot more dynamic than Meat Grinder. And that's not to say that Meat Grinder isn't cool. I'm just saying, like, there are characters that are really dope to look forward to seeing and meeting.
And when it comes to Zap, he's kind of the character that grows and becomes more and more badass as the series progresses. Like you were talking about, his hair's on fire on the 12th issue cover. Like he goes like full Super Saiyan kind of by the end once his training is complete. So at this point, he's supposed to be wimpy and not as good at fighting in this early issues. But hopefully people will like him more as he becomes more and more badass. But it's hard to beat a giant shark man, you know?
It's like, who's the, the main character of, is it My Hero Academia?
Oh, I have no
first
idea.
First season.
Deku, I think?
Yeah, I watched the, like, first season, and, like, I'm like, Jesus Christ, he's so fucking, like, whiny. But then he gets to the end, I'm like, oh, this guy's fucking awesome. And, like, it's like that, like, where you essentially have to go through, like, the hero's journey. So it's like, bear with us, he's gonna be fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, he's cool, we promise. And that's exactly what Zap is. Like, he's cool, we promise. He's easily the most relatable character in the series.
Yeah, and I tried to make him, like, he's not good at fighting, but he's not, like, there is that, like you said, like, you know, other anime, too. I tried to make sure he wasn't annoying. Like, I think that's a big thing. It's, like, he can be weak and, like, learn, but we're trying not to be annoying. So no one has said they don't like him. So I don't think he's annoying, but you never know.
Railroad you,
Tim. All right. So... gun to both your heads. If you were forced to write one episode of Two and a Half Men, what would happen?
Oh, I've got one. They would, wait, Hiram, back me up. So the Two and a Half Men would conjoin into the Triple Men, and then they would be a triple man. Like, they would combine all their powers and become a Mega Man.
There'll be three whole men.
The show will be called Three Whole Men. And they'll fight crime. It'll be great. Charlie Sheen will be at the top.
I love that. If that's the last question, that's a good send-off question. You know what I mean? Like, it's. I never expected like Two and a Half Men to ever come up in my life up to this point.
Right. It's America's number one comedy in 2004.
It's America's number one comedy in 2004. How old were we? We were like 9, and we're like, yeah, Charlie Sheen's great in this.
I look up to any man that disrespects women as the premise of the show. I don't know why.
Yo, yeah, the premise of the show is, isn't he so cool how he's an asshole to women and then he's nerdy? Isn't his brother so nerdy because he's nice? What a douchebag his brother is for being nice to people.
Not enough men.
Not enough men. You're half a man shy for me.
I know. By the end of that show, that kid was like a legit adult, and they're just like, "No, you're."
Wasn't he like bigger than the other guy?
Yeah. But yeah. He was not a man.
He's a boy.
They needed to have cast Haley Joel Osment because he will be forever young in the face.
Oh yeah, he's got young face.
I mean, what did I watch? Let's see. He was in that Ted Bundy, Zac Efron movie, and it's really unsettling.
Seeing him. Oh god, he's funny. Yeah, I did not see that.
But like, yeah.
But yeah, and he was in The Boys.
Oh, he was.
Oh yeah. Oh shit, yeah. So. If you're listening to this, like I said, it's out on the Friday. We're recording it on Wednesday, so still plenty of time to go back. It's plenty great tiers. I'm trying to look. Is there original left? Original art?
Yeah, there's a few. I think it's only like 10 are taken. I think there's quite a few left.
Yeah, I see 12 taken, so there's 18 left.
Yeah.
And I can like, that's like always my favorite tier, but then I have to like, that's like one you can't like hide from my wife when like a big thing shows up.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, well, hang that on the wall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because then she'll know.
Yeah, no, so it's harder to hide. It's like the action figures. So yeah. When you have no room left, and you have to like put them in other places in the house, that's when she starts to find out.
You know what you do? You super glue their feet and you put them on the ceiling. There's so much more room on the ceiling.
That's true. No one ever, if I've learned anything from, I think, was it superhero movies or something? No one ever looks up. So you just put them up there.
Yeah, no, literally. Tobey Maguire bleeds ketchup blood onto Willem Dafoe and he's like, whatever.
I should put them over the bed, and then when I lay in bed, I can just appreciate.
Yeah, appreciate awesome. Them all.
So if anyone wants to find out more about the book, but also kind of what you guys have going on, what's the easiest way they could do that?
You can find me on Instagram, dead_gremlin_comics, and then on Twitter at Jake Smith Art.
You can find me at on Instagram as Hiram, HIRAM.png, and on Twitter, Hiram in 4D.
Tim, what do you do? You do stuff.
I occasionally write over at Comics Pit, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Badera.
Sweet.
And again, if nice. You're listening to an hour-long comic book podcast show, you probably didn't stumble upon it, but we're at pages_panels. I think our email is ourpodcastsucks@gmail.com. But the most important thing is to think that one through. Is to go back the book again. If you guys can get me issue 4, that would be great.
appealing please.
To listeners. But either way, I have a feeling. Obviously, if you guys, if it doesn't get to that and it comes to doing something for the rest of the issues, it seems like at this point it's kind of a given. Hopefully, I feel like it's just. A given people will back this because I think it's one of the best things that came out last year, and it is easily like one of the most fun comics currently.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we love being on your podcast. It is a night when I told Hiram, I was like, we're on that podcast, and he was like, which one? And I was like, the George Lopez one. And he was like, oh, that one.
Yeah, no, I was, as soon as I heard George Lopez podcast, I'm like, I have to be on this. I
Yeah. Hopefully you didn't watch. You didn't watch all those episodes in preparation. Yes.
I did not. But I swear to you, I will go back and watch them now.
Those poor George Lopez fans who've sat through so many episodes get to this point, and they're like, "Oh shit, I listened to another hour where they didn't talk about George Lopez."
I mean, we did talk about George Lopez, just not for a whole hour. You know, we got a little bit George Lopez in. We had that. Quote from we mentioned his Oscar-worthy scene from Sharkboy and Lava Girl. I mean, I feel like that was enough.
That's enough. That's all you need.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Did they bring him back for the new one? My kids watched it. I didn't ask. I don't think they would know George Lopez if I
asked. I forgot they made a new one. I did not see it. I really want to though. I hope it's bad.
Me too.
I know it has like a hot dad Pedro Pascal on it, so I didn't watch it yet.
But. Oh,
Kyle, I think if your children don't know who George Lopez is, that's a failing on your part.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
I don't. The problem is I don't want to introduce them to it and then ruin all other media for them going forward. So,
although you're doing the good thing.
They watch there's like one Scooby-Doo where it's like every episode is a special guest. So maybe there's an Urkel one. We watched the Urkel one and I had to explain to them who Urkel was.
Which oh was wow.
That's conversation. A very wild concept to explain Steve Urkel to people.
Yeah, and it's a recent show. Like it was within the last like 4 years. So I don't know why they're bringing Urkel on there. You know, right? WB making me explain Urkel to my kids.
You're like, ah, oh, he showed up, and you're like, ah, oh, now I gotta explain Urkel. Damn it!
Right, because then I have to go into who's Carl Winslow, and then I explain to them my theory that takes place in the Die Hard universe, and that after the tragic events of Die Hard. He moved in with his family, like, so then I gotta explain to you what Die Hard is, and like, it's like this whole thing. I don't have this conversation.
I like to think that, like, Steve Urkel in the future, like, formed with, like, his doppelganger personality, his alter ego, Stefan or Kel.
Yeah.
And they're, like, they're just off having adventures somewhere, getting women, but also doing science and shit. Say what?
I think they separated by the end, right? They were two separate entities.
Yeah, no, there's two separate entities, but they should definitely form back together as one. The Stefan Urkel should come back. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Maybe they upload both their consciousness into Urkelbot. Maybe yeah. Control a half of Urkelbot.
It's like Pacific Rim, but Urkel.
That may not happen. That might not happen in the next issue of Bloodforce Trauma, but it may.
Urkel Rim.
Oh, shit, Urkel Rim. Melds.
Yeah. You got to scrap all of issue 4 now and take it in a different direction.
Yeah. No, yeah, we have to make the Stefan Urkel issue.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to edit all this out just because this is too great. I don't want anyone to take.
Yeah, you don't want it stolen.
But if you are a 65-year-old lady and you've made it this far, hoping we talk about George Lopez, I promise we will do it next episode. And again, thank you so much, guys, for coming on and talking to us.
Yeah, man, thank you. We had a great time.
Yeah, it was awesome.
All right, I'll stop recording.